Welcome to the CX Goalkeeper Podcast, where we unlock the winning edge through conversations with industry experts and thought leaders. Each episode explores how transforming business through human experience creates real impact. Join us for actionable insights and fresh perspectives that inspire success. Follow, rate, and review the podcast on your favorite platform. The next episode could spark your next big idea.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper Podcast. Today, a new topic, a different topic. We never spoke about this on this podcast, creating new workplaces where people thrive, a new approach to well-being. I think well-being is extremely important. And if this discussion will be as the pre-discussion together with Craig Firn, then it will be a blast. Hi, Craig. How are you?
Great to see you.
Thank you very much for your time and for sharing your knowledge, your wisdom together with us. Before we kick off and we deep dive into this extremely important topic nowadays, we would like to learn more about you. Craig, could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, so my name's Craig Firn. I've worked in workplace wellbeing on and off now for about 15, 20 years. I sort of got into this well before people found it cool. I suppose, you know, it was very much a new thing 20 years ago, the idea of sort of looking after your staff and sort of putting your staff first in what you were doing. I was very fortunate. As I said, I was one of the first people in, so I managed to sort of work all over the world, from South Korea through to Europe, over to America. All very, very different culturally, all very, very different in what they thought well-being meant. I then sort of decided to come back home to Cornwall, which is sort of in the UK, but it's as far south as you can go before you fall off. And we are sort of, it is a high area of deprivation. It's wages are low and, you know, there are a lot of challenges down here, but it's my home. It's where I grew up. So, you know, I came back to sort of help from a workplace wellbeing point of view. I was then approached by the Institute of Directors to sort of become an ambassador for them. And that's a role I've now held for the last 3.5 years, as well as working with sort of companies here and abroad. So workplace wellbeing has been my thing, my life, and obviously my passion.
That's so cool to hear that. And you mentioned the word passion, and therefore I'm keen to ask the next question. Which values drive your professional life?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So for me, honesty is a must. I have what I see to be one of the most privileged jobs there is. I get to listen to other people's stories. And they share their lives with me. And this is an incredible position to be in. But again, it's also a position that can be used, can be manipulated. You know, at the end of the day, if I don't have an answer, it's not right for me to pretend I do. And if I'm not the answer, then also it's not right of me to pretend that I am. You know, the customer always comes first, the client always comes first, whether that client is a multi-billion dollar international company or whether that's somebody you've just sat down with a park bench and started a conversation. So, you know, it's having that, and I suppose that leads to the next one, the integrity to say when you are not the right person for a job, rather than, I suppose I call it Nemoing. After Finding Nemo, so the seagulls that, you know, when the fish pop up, it's like mine, 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 and then they hold on to them, where in actuality, the better thing for the client is to let them go and say, okay, come back to me, but when you fix this bit, or, you know, I know somebody who does that, why don't you work with them and then come back round to me? So, you know, honesty and integrity for me are the core values that, you know, because at the end of the day, if I don't have my word, what do I have?
So true. And the important thing is that we all should live life with these values. And it's really key to for thriving and helping others because we need to help each other. Today, we know a bit more about you, today's top player, Craig Fearn, and now we are going into the game. You are mentioning that well-being is the topic for today, and you mentioned that at the beginning. There are different understanding what well-being is also from a cultural point of view. Could you please elaborate a bit on that?
So I've never really come across anyone that could definitively tell me what well-being means. I've come across lots of people who have a definition that they work to, but actually well-being as a concept is different for every individual. So what works for me might not work for you, which might not work for the next person, and so on and so on. The best attempt I've heard somebody sort of defining well-being was when they said it's balance across all areas of your life. And if you sort of translate that into business speak, it's sort of balance against all areas of the business. And again, this is where the whole sort of look after your staff piece has really sort of come to the fore in recent years, because it's been a long time in the making where businesses have finally started to realize that actually there's a real cost involved in not looking after their staff. You know, the numbers out there are quite astonishing. I did a bit of digging over the weekend, knowing I was speaking to you this morning, and the figure I got from the Department of Trade and Industry, so that's in the UK, is that the well-being of employees or employees being missing from a working environment due to well-being in the call center, customer service side of things alone, just in the UK, comes to 990 million. 990 million. That's nearly £1 billion. 31% of retail call center staff have taken time off due to mental ill health issues. And 71% of retail employees report mental health problems that are causing them to underperform.
Incredible numbers. This is really incredible. Perhaps if you're sharing that, we understand that it's a big issue. What can leaders, because I think it starts with leaders creating a culture, that a proper culture within a company. What can leader do to create a positive well-being culture? Thinking also about that every individual is different and therefore everybody has a different need.
Yeah, I think, so when I first started, people used to call me the why guy, because I always, that's where I always come at these things. So why do you do well-being? Is the first question I ask any business that wants to work with me. Why is it you're doing it? Is it because it's just a tick box? Or is it because you actually want to make a difference to what's going on in the workplace? But not just in the workplace. We have to accept that what happens in the workplace has a knock-on effect on our staff when they leave the workplace. In the same way that when we say to a member of staff, well, when you come into work, you've got to leave your problems at the door, was a really old saying that, you know, I grew up with. Well, I'm sorry, I can't. It's my life and it follows me wherever I go. So the first thing I think any business needs to understand is why it's actually trying to do what it's doing. So, you know, if we're going to go into a business and let's say you and I are working together and you come to me and you say, okay, look, I'm running this customer service center and we take all the calls that are coming in. So we're an inbound center, everyone's ringing us all the time. Well, I think the first thing we've got to work out is what type of center do you want to be? You've got the electronic sweatshop model where effectively, you know, you control everything. You're scripted. People, you know, have 5-minute breaks that are actually scheduled into what they do. They they're constantly over-monitored all the time. They're allowed no independent thought, which is actually quite interesting because, I was talking to somebody working in AI a little while ago, and I said, I find it really funny that we try and make computers more like humans, but we try and make humans more like computers. And it seems a bit weird to me. Why can't computers be computers and humans be humans? Because ultimately, the more you take away from a person, the less of a person they become. So, you know, if I'm setting poorly paid people into an environment where they've got no autonomy, they can't think for themselves, they pick up a phone, they put down a phone, they're going to beep in their ear, the next thing they've got someone talking to them, that's what I'm going to get. I'm going to get this gray individual that's just going to sit there every day, nodding, going yes, and then picking up and trudging out the door and, you know, going to do what they're going to do. Or do we want something that is the opposite? Do we want where we have less volume but more quality? And someone shared with me a triangle diagram the other day where they said, you know, look, you've got time, you've got quality, and you've got price. And what you can have two, but you can't have three. So you can only, you know, you can have low cost and low time. That works. You can have low cost and low quality, but you can't have all three together. And I said, well, doesn't that depend on how you measure each of those metrics? Because you can have, you know, it just depends on what you're telling me time should be, or what you're telling me cost should be, or what you're telling me quality should be, which I thought was an interesting sort of conversation we ended up having. But I think this is where we have this balance that's now trying to be struck within customer service and customer service centers, where effectively people have become far more measured by data than they have by the. So you can have a scenario where I meet one set of metrics. So let's say I've got a customer who's come in, had a really difficult problem that I've spent time to help them through to solve. That meets my going above and beyond customer service. What a great guy. Brilliant. Somebody says, Craig's marvelous at what he does. I get my five at the end out of, you know, the. However, it took me 20 minutes. But now I've failed on one of my metrics. So which metric then becomes more important? Is it the customer service metric? Well, the fact I could have spoken to two people in that 20 minutes rather than. So here's where we're actually working out why becomes so important. You know, if your why is stack them high, price them cheap, push them out the door, then that's the metrics that you use. And everyone understands that, and, you know, you're set up to do that. But actually, if you want to go the other way and you want to raise those customer service bars, which actually we all should be striving for anyway, because of the financial implications, we all know customer retention, loyalty, all these sort of well-documented things. So your key individual in this whole equation becomes a person rather than a computer. And a person thinks on their feet, and a person has their own knowledge of life, and a person has their own color that comes with them. If you're sapping that out and you're putting gray in all day, all I'm getting when I'm calling up as a customer is a facsimile. I'm just getting another nod on the end of the phone, and it's like, what on earth is this all about? But when those matrix go further up the line, that's what they want to see. They want to see these numbers. And, you know, fortunately for me, working with the Institute of Directors, I speak to director level individuals on a regular basis. And the unfortunate part is, in some companies, they have what I call Empire State Syndrome. So if you can imagine, I give you an office at the top of the Empire State Building, and you look out and you look down, and everyone below you is a worker, but they're so small, they look like ants. Now, I know there are people who are really sort of into ants and things like that, but I can't say personally I've ever looked down and gone, oh, I wonder what that ant feels, or this kind of stuff. So the further away, the further detached these senior leaders become, the smaller, and now I'm just a number, just a matrix. I'm just a cog in the system. And this, for me, is back to the what. You know, when you get to directors or C-suite, of you, you know, and they have directors and C-suite, whether we like them or not, are some of the loneliest sort of, it's such a tough job at the top. Because, the you know, at the end of the day, the decisions you make have so far-reaching repercussions. And not, I firmly believe, no business or no individual actively goes out to harm anybody else. They're just making decisions based on the information that's put in front of them. So what we need to start doing as a collective, as a group, and in whatever way this goes in terms of well-being, is actually changing the matrix that's put in front of them as to what success looks like. And that's the why. The why is, why are you doing this? If you're doing this to stack them high, keep them cheap, throw them out, okay. You are never, ever going to get it, because that's the way you want to do it. If you want to be known as the highest quality, the unicorn of all, you know, environments like this, then you have to look at it a different way. Is there a balancing act to be done? Of course. Every business needs to make money, you know, whether we like it or not. Customer service is there for a reason, and the reason is the customer part. But what we haven't done as a sort of society, I think, is we've not looked at how things have changed within what's now being demanded of our industry. So whereas, you know, what, 20-odd years ago, if I was going to do customer service, or if I was going to contact a customer service, my first point of call for me would have been the high street. I'd have walked in, I'd have gone and spoken to an individual that I bought the product from, or I, whatever it was, and said, hey, this is what's going on. Any chance we can? So I've got an individual, I've got a person who can make a decision. Then, of course, we got into 24-hour customer service. So just because I work 24 hours, you now have to work 24 hours, because I might want something at 2 o'clock in the morning at my time, which changes the game again, because now we've got people who have to do this out of hours, for some, not for others. We've brought everything together into these sort of customer centers to minimize costs. Because if I can get 100 people to take 1,000 calls, I don't need people in shops, in stores all over the country. You know, I'm saving on my rents. I'm saving on. So everything is being sort of drawn into this balancing between exactly how little face-to-face contact, how little involvement, how little person-to-person can we get away with before people start rebelling and going, no, 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 no. You know, as I said, I live in Cornwall. We are usually sort of the last to get a technological innovation or something. And one of my local superstores had automatic checkouts. So they came in, they got rid of half of their checkout staff for, you know, beat, do it yourself kind of things. And there was a huge pushback, because these people started saying, well, hang on a minute, part of my experience of coming shopping is to go through the queue and have that conversation, to have that interaction. But now we're just looking at putting people through quickly, and how many can we put through and how fast can we put them through? Again, I had another colleague conversation a little while ago where I said, well, since when did we go from quality time to everything being rapid time? You know, we've gone from the quality of the relationship into how many processes, transactions we can do. Again, we go back to this whole computer analogy. How fast is my computer? How many things can my computer do at once? Well, okay, that's great. But if my computer breaks down, I don't want to ring somebody up who's going to go, and all of a sudden, I'm, what the, you know, this isn't where I am. So I suppose in a long, drawn out answer to your question on sort of well-being and how it's changing, it is the why. It's why you're doing what you're doing, whether it be automating stuff, whether it be bringing in something for your staff, whether it be the metrics you're looking at. It's all the why game. It's understanding the wider implications of the decisions you make, and then working out how you can mitigate them as much as you can while looking after the people that you have.
It was a long answer, but it was full of insights and nuggets. We should try to unpack. You touched the topic strategy. You touch understanding the needs of the employees, and you touched also the topic around what you measure. How you measure success, it's the indicator what you want to achieve and of your why. And before we deep dive in these few topics, one thing that popped to my mind while you were explaining that we continuously read in the news that now companies are asking people to come back into the office, that remote working is not anymore a good thing because they are saying productivity decreased dramatically. And what I also see is, yes, we can create a relationship while we are speaking online now and we are seeing each other's, but basically it's completely different quality of the discussion if you are sitting in front of yourself and having this discussion. What's your view on this split? Some people working into the office, some people working from home, also linked with all what you said with people working throughout the night because you have a question at 2 a.m. in the morning, or because somebody on the other side of the world, 12 p.m. calling us, but on our side is mid of the night. What are the implications on well-being, being continuously active and split throughout remote and in the office?
So I think sort of where we were talking at the beginning, when we said everybody's well-being is different, because everyone has different things going on in their lives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think when we get into sort of well-being in itself, flexibility becomes a buzzword. So, you know, everyone says to me, oh, we're working more agile, we're working more flexibly. And it's like, okay, well, what does that actually mean? You can give me all these words. I can tell you that zeitgeist and this and the blah, 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 and we can use all these great terms. But why? I'm going to go back to why. But why? You know, why are you doing what you're doing? What are you doing? You know, and bringing people back into work is going to be a godsend for some people. There are some people who have felt incredibly lonely, who have felt incredibly isolated by working from home, who actually, quite frankly, couldn't do their job from home. You know, I don't know many farmers or things that could do these types of things from their offices. And, you know, that's important to understand. That's important to sort of take to the heart of any decision, that some people love it. And having that flexibility and ability to do a bit and bob, and, you know, yes, I can do this, and then that gives me the flexibility to do this and do this. And that's okay. But then there are people that don't like that side of stuff, which is why, again, when we look into the whys of what we're trying to do, what are we trying to accomplish by bringing people back into the workplace is the first question. Well, people work harder when they're in work, in inverted commas. What you mean, you can watch them better. You can monitor them better. You can see if they're sat there, you know, having a drink or whatever the case might be. So is that your why? Is your why that you get greater control and you get greater understanding of what's going on? Or is your why that you've had a lot of people coming to you and saying, actually, I'd love to come back into the workplace. I'd find it, you know, I really wish that I had the opportunity to come in and work from an office. And if we've got a balance of some people saying, well, you know, we'd like to work from home. Some people saying we'd like to work from the office. Flexibility to me means, well, okay, on a Monday and a Tuesday, you can work from home. On a Thursday and a Friday, I'd like you in because we've got team meetings. And that means you can be actively part of what's going on while being part of the other way around. You can apply to work from home. So, you know, this is becoming law, or, you know, certainly being looked at becoming law within the UK, where you actually have that ability to ask for flexi, where, you know, you can be in, you can be out. But it isn't, you know, we're not talking about the okie dokie kind of thing. What we're actually saying here is you can be in or you can be at home. But actually, we want you to have a certain amount of time in, a certain amount of time home. And that works for all of us. Or if you want to finish at 3 o'clock every day because you need to pick up your son, that's fine. Start work at 8 o'clock if it's possible. So, you know, for me, the whole discussion about pulling people back into work is about the why you want them there. If you want them there because they can only do their job from there, that's difficult to argue with. But if you're wanting them there so that you have a greater control over the outputs, is that now a trust issue? Do you have some reason to be bringing these people back? For me, a flexible, negotiated approach is always better for all parties, because what you're showing is we're listening, but B, we value enough or value you enough to be prepared to flex, to say, well, rather than you just leaving, why don't you work this time here and this time here? And then you've got an employee who's going telling other employees, what an amazing company I work for. They were prepared to sit here, listen to what I had to say. Nobody pointed a finger and went, you must do this. There's no dictatorial 1984 sort of cameras on every court. It's, okay, I need you to do this. If you do this, then you've done what I've asked you to do. That you understand the best way of you doing this might be that you need a slight change in what's going on, that you need to go and pick your child up because you don't have any childcare, that you work better in the mornings because you have a disability that affects you as the day goes on. You suffer from narcolepsy, so you're up at night. All these types of things can be worked in if hand one talks to hand two rather than tells hand two. Because if you start telling hand two says, well, thanks ever so much. Over there, they're going to let me do that. Thanks very much. My 20 years service is moving on.
Yes, and then I think what's extremely relevant and what you are saying is measuring or qualifying success, not but the time and where the person is sitting on the chair and how warm is the chair, but measuring that by the results brought by these people. I really like what you are saying, putting also this productivity on the side. You mentioned that you came back home because you wanted to be part of the community, and at the end also a company is a community. Therefore, I personally see the value, as you shared, that if people can meet in the office and sometimes when it's team meeting and so on, they can better create this feeling of community and this feeling of being together to achieve what was defined as the why. And basically, this really helped, because at the end, that's what is driving the business, motivated people doing their job and achieving the result. Let's assume that now the why is understood, that employees are so important and the company want to achieve something. Are there some strategies or the first steps that you are doing together with the companies you are working with that you can share with the audience that perhaps they can also leverage?
Yeah, sure. So let's, again, we'll assume that why number one, there will be many whys, but why number one, the actual sort of the big picture is we want to better look after our staff. Yeah, so we want to better look after our staff, and in so doing, reduce the amount of turnover we have, the amount of sick leave we have, you know, all these metrics that we know are costing us money. Yes, we want to address that. So that's the cost element. But actually, we want to improve what our staff say about us. We want to improve how our staff view the job. We want to improve the actual sort of social marketing side of things, where, you know, our staff are going on LinkedIn and whatever else going, oh, brilliant place I work for. They did this, they did that. What we don't want to be doing is going, well, I'll tell you what, we'll give all our staff a banana on a Friday. And that's well-being. And, you know, the amount of times I've had these conversations where companies go, well, you know, we let them all out to buy a pizza on a Friday. Brilliant. I like pizza. It's fantastic. What about Monday? Well, I've eaten my pizza now. And if it hasn't been eaten, I'm pretty sure the cleaners have thrown it away or something. So what am I going to do on a Monday? And this is the whole thing. It's not what you'll find with well-being is it's not, as we've said at the beginning, well-being is balance in all areas. So it's not as simple as giving everyone a pizza on a Friday. It's about actually creating a culture. It's about creating a lifestyle within your business where people are happy to talk about their issues and are okay to bring these things up and don't feel embarrassed if they have to have a bit of time off because something bad has happened in their life. Or if they are struggling, can come forward without worrying that the door's over there and we've got another 10 people lined up around the corner to come and do your job, which unfortunately is the way things are, you know. And I make no bones about that. You know, I've been into many different industries in many different countries, and it is still the way things are. Staff do still feel disconnected from their workplace environment, whether I'm a director of a mining company or a customer service company or a telecom, whatever it might be. Unfortunately, the sort of the way things have always been done leads people into those types of scenarios. So what we have to do is we have to start bringing people back on board. Interestingly enough, I was speaking to somebody, another call center employee, a little while ago, who said, my job is to do data metrics. So effectively, all I do all day is get the data in, compile the reports, send the reports, and that's my job. And they were asked, well, what happens is if somebody came off the telephones and came to you and said, look, I can't find my shift manager, but I'm having a really bad time. You know, do you know who I can talk to, where I can go, what the score is? And the response from this individual was, it's not my job. I don't deal with you. I don't deal with people. I deal with data. that's my job. That's what you pay me to do. You know, the company pays me to come in, do this, and whatever else. Now, unfortunately, again, this isn't uncommon. I come in, the days of coming in, doing a job, keeping your head down, and then disappearing. And everyone's like, oh, so-and-so was here today. They did their job and they went. Now, for me, if we're going to do something about this, it's this culture piece. So it's actually everyone in the business understanding that they're part of a greater entity. Think about it as a living, breathing organism, a body. You know, at the top, you've got the brain, which is the directors and the C-suite and all this kind of stuff. And then you've got the heart, which pumps all the blood around and does all the other stuff. And this is where you have your customer service reps. And, you know, you've got your team leaders who are in there, who are the sort of nervous system that connects the brain to the rest of the organs. And then you've got the lungs that are your data management crew that keep everything going and moving. But there's blood that runs through all of it. And it's that blood that we focus on when we create a culture. It's those unifying factors. It's the fact that the blood has got to, you know, the brain comes up with an idea. It then has to send that idea down through the nervous system. So in our case, the levels of management, who then have to relay all that out. Then they have to get all the data back up through from the lungs. Without any one of these pieces, it stops working. If you take the heart out of a body, that's your lot. You take the brain out, you know. So this is always my analogy. We create a culture by getting everyone to understand that everybody else is equally as important in that sort of scenario. We're paid at different levels because of our skill sets, and I understand that. I get the responsibility that we take. But what I do affects somebody else further down the line in the same way that what they do. If we don't have the heart, the rest of us aren't powered, so we have no jobs. So that's it. We're gone. We could be the best director in the world, but if the heart isn't pumping, that's it. Well, I've got no job. We could be the best data analyst in the world, but if the heart isn't pumping, I've got no job.
I think that's the perfect example or analogy. To conclude this discussion, we are coming to an end. I would have hundreds of additional questions, but I hope to get you back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast quite soon. In the last few seconds, few minutes of this game, in the extra time, quick three questions to pass forward. In 10 years from now, we are back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast. What we're discussing about?
What I'd hope we would be discussing is how things have changed, how people have stopped saying things have changed because they've actually changed, how we don't need to be bragging about how well we're doing at this kind of stuff because actually it's just the norm and everyone does it. So, you know, that's just the way it is.
Thank you. And what's the best way to contact you?
So I'm most active on LinkedIn. Craig Fern 1 is my LinkedIn handle. Email, I'm info@craigfern.com, and Fern is spelled F-E-A-R-N. But yeah, always active on LinkedIn, always happy to have conversations and, you know, work with good people to do good things.
Thank you very much. And the last question is Craig's golden nugget. It's something that we discussed or something new to leave to the audience with.
Oh, golden nugget. Always understand why you're doing something before you do it, I think is my golden nugget. It goes back to the why. If somebody tells you to do something, why? Why are you doing what you're doing? So be happy with what you're doing, understand it before you get on with it.
Craig, thank you very much for your time. Please stay with me. To the audience, for today, it's everything. I hope that you enjoyed this discussion. It was full of golden nuggets, and I'm looking forward to invite Craig back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast to continue this discussion. For this time, We appreciate your feedback. Feel free to contact Craig or to contact me for any questions related to this topic. Thank you very much and bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth. Subscribe it, share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business. We are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you.